Yes, the reading this morning is from the Gospel of Mark, and it's chapter 6, beginning to read at verse 30, and it can be found on page 39. And just to put this event into context, the disciples have been very busy. They've just been out in their twos, starting the Great Commission, and they're also very sad because they've heard of the death of John the Baptist. So starting to read at verse 30 of chapter 6. The apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. He said to them, "Come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a deserted place by themselves and arrived ahead of them. As he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. When it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is now very late. Send them away so that they may go into the surrounding country and villages and buy something for themselves to eat." But he answered them, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, and he said to them, "How many loaves have you? Go and see." When they had found out, they said, "Five and two fish." Then he ordered them to get all the people to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the five loaves and the two fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to his disciples to set before the people. And he divided the two fish among them all. And all ate and were filled. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. Those who had eaten the loaves numbered 5,000 men. Immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. After saying farewell to them, he went up on the mountain to pray.
Thank you, Jane. If you could keep that scripture open, that would be brilliant. So, in years to come, historians will look to the year 2007, as a key year in the history of the human story. 2007. Anyone know why 2007 is such an important year? Good answer. I'd forgotten that. Thank you. Good. We got married in 2007. Anyone else got a more general answer that's more broader than... Money changing. No, it's not that, Irene. It's good, but it's not right, as I used to say on Catchphrase. So 2007 was the year of the digital age, where the digital age exploded onto an unsuspecting world. There was this incredible convergence in that year. In 2007, Steve Jobs unleashed the iPhone. In 2007, Facebook went from a platform that could be used on a college campus in America to be open to anyone who had an email address. Twitter went from being a micro-blogging site to becoming a global phenomenon, and loads of other different things all in that one year happened, and that is considered the year when the digital age began. If you're in your 20s, your early 20s, you probably won't know any other thing than that. Those of us who were born before that will remember a different time. And there are huge positives to this technology. Take Skype or FaceTime, if you use that. It's an incredible thing. When we met In 2004, Sophia and I, she lived in Sweden, I lived in the UK. I was on dial-up internet, and we used something called MSN Messenger, which is a little bit like WhatsApp or kind of online texting. And we would phone each other once every 2 weeks. That was the rule we set, and it was a great rule. It was really good for us at that time. That was what it was like. Now with Skype, we can talk to our family in Sweden, in a coffee shop, on our phone, anywhere. Incredible. I almost never go into a shop to buy clothes now, as you can see. But I buy all my clothes online. It's incredible. The interesting thing with that, you spend less time in shops, but there's an exponential increase in the amount of time you spend in a post office when you shop online. Because you miss the parcel and you have to go and pick it up, or you have to take something back. So not all things work quite as well. Or you can program your central heating from a sun lounger by a pool in Spain. You can even not only create a delicious meal, but you can take a photo of it to share with us. So annoying if you do that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a Luddite who thinks that all tech, all social media should be destroyed. There are some amazing benefits. Church Suite is going to be incredible, John tells us. There's so many amazing benefits to living in the modern world. But unquestionably, I believe there is a shadow side to life in the modern world for us today. And I just want to take a few minutes to focus on that before we come to this passage in Mark's Gospel. So we live in a time of great haste. We are financially rich, largely, but we are time poor. We sacrifice good food for fast food. We believe that there are not enough hours in the day to do everything that we need to do. We suffer from what Dallas Willard calls hurry sickness. We try and buy back time, thinking that we'll get more things done. And maybe the most toxic, and I use that word deliberately, the most toxic element of modern life in 2019 is that we are distracted. I wonder if we could have that picture. Maybe you know this. This is Banksy. It's called Modern Lovers. We are a distracted people. We live in a world when we rarely offer someone our whole attention. When I was young, back in the day, there was this really cool thing called boredom. Boredom was amazing. Do you remember boredom? Any of you? If you're on a train or a bus, you could daydream, you could imagine, you could think. I didn't really enjoy it that much at the time, but I long for boredom right now. And distraction and hurry robs us, and it robs us particularly of the ability to be present to other people, present to ourselves, and present to God. Maybe you're already not present here with me as I'm talking. Once a week, I have a precious 90 minutes with my daughter. She's a mummy's girl. She would rather hang out with Sophia than with me, generally. But this 90 minutes we have together when I take her up to her swimming lesson. And she chats away to me in the car. And I help her get changed. I try and work out how to get her into a swimming costume without the straps getting in the wrong place. I don't know how you do that. And then the hardest thing for me, and the thing that she hates the most, is when I'm watching. So I let her go off into her class, and I go up to the balcony in the sports center. And I am having a battle with my phone, whether I can keep this thing in my pocket. And I can't. I fail. Maybe I can check my email. Maybe I can snoop on social media. Maybe I can feed the insatiable desire to consume more stuff, buy more things. And Matilda actually wants my attention. She wants me to see what she's doing. Every time she swims a width, she looks up at me. She wants me to see that what she's done. And I'm giving her my partial attention. She wants me to give her a thumbs up or blow her a kiss or, yeah, go for it. And like 95% of the other parents there, I am not completely present. I need to lock my phone in the locker with her clothes. Do you know that feeling? Do you know that experience? And the thing is that we're not present with ourselves. We're often so wired, so on the go, so driven, that we've lost touch with how we feel. Anxiety for me mostly manifests itself at nighttime when I have to stop. That's usually the time when I start reflecting and all thoughts come into my head and I can't switch it off. And we are so distracted that we're rarely present with God. We talk about having a relationship with God. That is theologically the case when we receive Jesus as Lord. But maybe for many of us, I wonder if that's experientially how it feels. Do we experience relationship with God? The writer John Ortberg says that the danger for most of us is not that we renounce faith. Most people won't do that. But the danger is that we become so rushed and so distracted and so preoccupied, he says, that we settle for a mediocre version of life in all its fullness that Jesus has come to offer us. But just, or a practice or a discipline that Jesus did, that Jesus had, which would help us. Wouldn't that be great if we could do what Jesus did? That we could be open to thrive in his love and in his presence in modern life. And there truly is. And it's what we read about in Mark's gospel this morning. Why don't you turn to chapter 6? It's called Silence and Solitude. So silence and solitude are two sides of the same coin. They go together. They're so closely connected that you can't really separate them. The mystics, the seasoned spiritual practitioners of the life of discipleship and the spiritual disciplines consider these two, silence and solitude, to have the primacy amongst all the spiritual practices. Why? Because silence and solitude are the doorway by which we can enter into so many of the other spiritual disciplines of worship and prayer and fasting and meditation on God's word and some of the other things that we've talked about and countless others that we won't be talking about. So that silence and solitude open us into that more spacious place to experience those things and enter into those disciplines. But crucially, silence and solitude are also the place where we gain some element of freedom from the forces and values of society that are relentlessly trying to squeeze us into their mold. Silence and solitude is an intentional time to be quiet amidst a world of noise, to be alone with ourself, and to be alone with God. That is different to being lonely, and it's different to being isolated. I don't know about you, but in the freneticism of today's world, I often long to be isolated. You know, we crash out, we run out of steam. We turn to escapism in all kinds of unhealthy forms. We binge on Netflix or food or dodgy stuff online. Because we're too tired to do what's life-giving. But solitude is different to that. It's an intentional engagement, a chosen and deliberate separation and abstaining from interacting with others for a period of time. Not because we're just trying to avoid people, although we may be, but because we're trying to find God and in some way find ourselves. Henry Nouwen put it as bluntly as this: without solitude, it's virtually impossible to live a spiritual life. Impossible to live a spiritual life. Silence is when we quiet the noise. The external noise, which involves switching off the music or the podcast, however good it may be. We're not simply living off other people's stuff. We're trying to engage with God in our way. It means switching the phone off and putting it in the drawer out of arm's length. It means stopping talking. So it's silencing the external noise, but also the internal noise, the clutter of our minds, the fantasy and worry and revenge and the to-do list. And silence is when we quieten both those things, internally and externally. Without silence, solitude will have little effect, and without solitude, silence is almost impossible. And this is what Jesus did. This is what we see him doing again and again. Like the tide, he had a rhythm where he went out and then he came back in on his own. Periods of engagement with people and then periods of engagement on his own with the Father. And we see this again and again. You read about the wilderness or the desert or the quiet place or the solitary place or the lonely place, all summed up in one Greek word, which is a word called eremos, which is the quiet place, the solitary place, the environment where communion with God can happen. So right at the beginning of his ministry, we're told that the Spirit drove him out into the wilderness where he was silent on his own for 40 days, where he prayed and he fasted and he was strengthened for the barrage that was just about to come from the evil one. Before he chose his disciples, he spent a whole night in the solitary place. After he'd healed someone or after a long day's work and a short night's sleep, he gets up early in the morning to go to the quiet place. Right at the end, as he's preparing for his greatest fight, he goes to the lonely place of Gethsemane. Countless other examples besides where Jesus withdrew, stepped back. Everyone wants him, but he wants to be alone with God. And this is what we see in Mark chapter 6. As Jane said earlier in the chapter, Jesus has sent out the 12 to proclaim the kingdom, preach the good news, heal the sick, cast out demons. That's what he told them to do. And they come back in verse 30, I think it is, and they're buzzing. This was amazing. You won't believe what we saw happen. Right now, this is Jesus at the zenith of his fame. He is hard-pressed. He is popular. He is a superstar. He's being relentlessly pursued and besieged. He is seriously busy. Such that they didn't even have a chance to eat. Do you know that kind of feeling too? Don't have time to eat. I know that feeling. Not taking a lunch break or grabbing a sandwich in the car. Life seems so busy. If you're a parent, you know that feeling. Not having enough time to do what you need to do. You're looking after others. Maybe your boss is filling your inbox and you don't quite know how to detach yourself from it. Maybe you're at university and not only are you studying really hard, you've got to get at least one job to reduce the financial pressure that you're under. You don't have time to stop and eat, let alone have time to dwell or hang out with God. Well, if that's you, you're in good company. That's what Jesus was like. And so Jesus says to them, come with me. He says, come with me. Let's go somewhere else to a quiet place. What you really need is, you don't need escape. You don't need isolation. You don't even need another glass of wine. You just need to be with me, says Jesus. They went away in the boat to a deserted place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they hurried there on foot from all the towns, and they arrived ahead of them. Isn't that just typical? Jesus invites you to go, And people spot you. Oh, they're going over there. Let's go round. Let's cut it, cut them off. It's real life, this. They need time alone, but the quiet place is not going to be quiet for much longer. And that's the same for us as well. We may even be thinking, okay, I want to spend time alone with God for some time. And then you get a message from your unwell parent asking you to come and help them, or your child can't sleep, or there's a crisis at work. That is life. Those are legitimate calls upon us. Sometimes that happens. But jump down to the bottom of the page, verse 45. Jesus is full of compassion, and by the way, that's one of the things that happens when you spend time alone with God and you stop talking. When we were praying before the service, Wayne reminded us that, I think it was in the Bible in one year, it says that we've got two eyes, two ears, and one mouth. The more time you spend using these, the less time you spend using this, and the more compassion you have as you spend time alone with God. That is one of the happy byproducts of silence and solitude. And that's what Jesus is like. He's spent time alone with God, and now he's moved with compassion. There is something important I need to do here. And I need to, there's an incredible deep theological thing about what's happening when he feeds the 5,000 as well. But immediately after that's happened, and immediately one of Mark's favorite words, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat, go on ahead to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after he waved them off, he went up on the mountain to pray. Do you see what he's done? He's got some space, and he's going to go and spend time with the Father. Maybe that was the only thing he could do, snatching some time to dwell in his Father's presence and pray. Jesus needed to do this. I need to do this. Dare I say it, you need to do this too. Please don't close your ears and your heart to that. Yeah, I'm a vicar. Yeah, I'm an introvert. I'm a fairly biased source. Some people say I only work one day a week. I've got all kinds of reasons why this could be good for me. But I believe it is vital for every single one of us. Regardless of our personality, whether we're an extrovert and for whom being on our own is just like really hard, whatever our working occupation or whatever, this is what God has made us for, to withdraw as well as engage. And it's so countercultural, it's easy to think that we can't do this and it's easy to not even give it a shot. But if you know what it's like to feel bone weary physically or bone dry spiritually, by all means, come for prayer. I want to encourage you to do that, if you know what that feels like. Maybe that's what you're feeling like today. But I would dare to say that actually what we all need in those times is just time to be with the Father. We're looking at these habits for fruitfulness. And habits are things that we do. This is not just a good idea or a mindset. Today, I don't have a lot of time, but let me just give you a few thoughts. In Celebration of Discipline, which we've recommended as a brilliant book about the spiritual disciplines by Richard Foster, he recommends starting by grabbing what he calls the little solitudes. Little solitudes. It's a little bit like what Sophia was talking about last week. Starting maybe right at the beginning of the day. That is a little solitude for most of us. Usually most of us have a little bit of time on our own at the beginning of the day before we even get out of bed. How about we start then by closing our eyes, taking some slow, deep breaths to breathe in the presence and the love of Jesus. It could be that we recite a few words of a psalm that we've memorized and offer ourselves in our day quietly to the Lord's. There'll be other times that are often lost to us, other little solitudes that we may have that we've just never thought about, where we can reorientate ourselves back onto God, going out and then coming back in again. in the life in his book called The Life You've Always Wanted, which is another great book, by the way, that we recommend, The Life You've Always Wanted by John Ortberg. He suggests a similar thing at the end of the day, a bit like that, what you may have heard of something called the prayer of examine. It's a little bit like that, but another way, just at the end of the day, just to grab a little bit of silence on our own. We need to kind of schedule this into our life. And by all means, and let me encourage you to start small. Don't aim for hours and hours. Start small. Give yourself a huge dose of grace, 5 to 10 minutes, a few times a week. And as things develop and as we enjoy it more, we can go for a little bit longer. Maybe a few hours or a quiet day. Just over the hill in above Bolster Moor is Westwood Christian Center. It costs, I think, £20 for a day. And sometimes I go there for a day just to have some time on my own. Just take a day, go over to Westwood. Or even a silent retreat of 2 to 3 days. And if you've done that, you would know the amazing experience it is of actually just being quiet, including eating your meal in silence, which is incredibly liberating, not having to make small talk with people that you've never met and hopefully will never meet again. And obviously, if you're part of a family, this will require some negotiation. It may feel like, gosh, you're being so selfish. Three days away from me. What does he think? What does she think? We need to obviously talk about it together. But often we're happy to, you know, let our loved one go off for a weekend with friends. Why don't we encourage them to go off for a weekend with the Lord together in the silence? Don't do anything. Try not to do anything. And being, and obviously there is some doing involved in that. For me, I start by breathing, because often when you're stressed and driven, your breathing is very fast, and so you just need to slow down and breathe. Breathe in the love of God. This is not weird mumbo jumbo. This is not dodgy. God has put his breath into our hearts, into our lives, and we just breathe in more of God's love and breathe out the stress and the strain. Sometimes it's just about intentionally focusing on Jesus, and sometimes that's using your imagination, taking a passage like this and imagine yourself in the boat with Jesus on your own. Jesus saying, come on, let's go over there. And go in your imagination with Jesus to a quiet place right where you are. It may be about using an image. I've got a couple of little postcards in my Bible that are just helpful images. One that we use at the communion service of it's the chapel at Buckfast Abbey, I think in Devon or Dorset, somewhere down there. And Jesus just at communion in the stained glass window. I use that as a really helpful image just for me to draw near to God. Jesus is saying, come. Everything in that picture, Jesus is saying, come. And maybe just focusing on a picture like that. I know in some of the life groups, you've been exploring something called Lectio Divina, divine reading, quiet reading, reading just 3 or 4 words from a passage and focusing on that. That's a brilliant thing to do in silence. But it's about listening to God and being with God. Lots of other resources, including those two books. I also just want to briefly recommend a website to you, which I think will just come up on the screen now. This is a website called Practicing the Way. And if you're in a life group, if you're a life group leader, this is a brilliant resource. Or if you're an individual and you just want to spend some time exploring silence and solitude a little bit more. Practicing the Way is by a guy called John Mark Comer, who I heard speak on this at New Wine. Actually, all that stuff at the beginning about culture, the culture of today, I've nicked that from his talk at New Wine. And he's got some brilliant, really down-to-earth ways to engage with silence and solitude, and loads of other of the spiritual disciplines on that website, Practicing the Way. So do take a look if that will be helpful. So this is how Richard Foster concludes his chapter on solitude and silence. He says, don't you feel a tug, a yearning to sink down into the silence and solitude of God? Don't you long for something more? Doesn't every breath crave a deeper, fuller exposure to God's presence. It's the discipline of solitude and silence that will open that door. So what we're going to do, I'm conscious of time, but let's just take 5 minutes to be silent together. And let's just be still. We're going to sit as comfortably as we can. And let's just take a moment amidst all that's going on in our life and in our heart and in our mind, just to be quiet together.